sense of humor.
That's a good thing to have.
Well, I got a cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Great, like.
All right. I say we get started. There's a lot of girl talk to do, so. Welcome to tonight's session. Come on in. You can go wherever you need to go. My name is Anders Petersen. I fulfill the role of pastoral intern in the village. It's a great privilege to be able to do that here. A little bit about me. I'm most recently from Chelan, which is just down at the end of the lake here. That's where I've been an intern for the previous 9 months, working at the Lutheran Church in Chelan. And then I was a student in Berkeley for the last few years, studying divinity there at one of our Lutheran seminaries, which is actually part of a larger collection of schools called the Graduate Theological Union, lots of religious schools. And actually, that's where I learned about the girl effect and had the privilege of being part of a team of folks to go and talk about it. And my role specifically was to talk about the girl effect from the role of the perspective of a religious leader. So that's what I know well. So the rest of it is we'll get to that. So I welcome you and I thank you for coming. I'm sure a lot of you are wondering what this is, right? So we'll do that in the beginning. Most of the material I'm using is stuff that you can use. So my hope by the end of our hour together is that, one, you will know what the girl effect is. Two, you will be empowered to want to go and share your knowledge about the girl effect with those around you. And maybe you'd even want to do that by making one of these presentations sometime. And the third is to see how big of a deal this is. And that it really is an agent for global change in the world. And I'll tell you why. Because this beautiful young lady right here, who is an adolescent girl living in poverty, is one of many millions, many tens of millions of young girls who need support. She needs an opportunity to improve her health, to improve her future. She needs an opportunity to break out of the cycle of poverty that she's in. And I can tell you what the girl effect is, but there's so much good stuff out there on it. So instead of having me be the one to tell you, we're going to have this video clip tell us about it.
Thank you.
pretty powerful what just a screen of words can do, isn't it? The girl effect. Come on in. You're especially welcome if you're a girl. Find a seat. Make sure you can see the screen. The girl effect, the powerful social and economic change brought about when girls have the opportunity to participate. We maybe don't think about it every day because it's hard to think about, but many girls in the world do not have the opportunity to participate. So when I've done this presentation in the past, we actually use a completely different format. Most of the stuff I'm using tonight is stuff that you can use again. So we're going to switch out of this, and I'm going to invite our first person who's going to read the story of one of these girls that is in the world right now, and then we'll look at some statistics. So can the first person read their little slip of paper, please, and stand up nice and loud if you can.
I am a 9-year-old girl. I will leave school this year to work and help my family and will marry by 14. I've experienced violence in the home from my husband, and I've been living with multiple chronic illnesses. I lost 2 of my 4 children before they reached a year old, and almost died from childbirth myself.
Thank you. So we're getting there. This is a program called Prezi. It's a free program. It's a really great way to do presentations. Just something to... There we go. Sorry about that. These are statistics. They're backed up by really hard research. I can give you the where the research comes from if you'd like. 70% of the world's 130 million out of school. 70%. At least 1 out of every 3 women around the world has been beaten. 1 out of 3 women around the world has been beaten, coerced into sex, otherwise abused in her lifetime, with the abuser usually being someone that knows her. 1/2 of sexual assaults in the world are against girls that are younger than 15 years of age. Girls from poor households are 3 times more likely than better-off girls to give birth during adolescence. And they bear 2x as many children. Pregnancy, medical complications are the leading cause of death among girls ages 15 to 19 worldwide. Pregnancy, medical complications are the leading cause of death among girls who are 15 to 19. Okay, how about person number 2? Please stand up and tell us who you are tonight.
You asked me to read this, okay. I am a 15-year-old girl. I will complete 1/2 of high school and will work for 3 years as a shop assistant before marrying at age 20. I will have 2 children, both of whom will survive childhood with few illness, and both will also complete high school.
Thank you. Girls who receive an education marry later. They have fewer children. They're more likely to seek health care for themselves and their children, and are more likely to send their children to school. Female education is a good investment that raises national income. And higher income, in turn, leads to more gender equality in education and other areas. And providing girls one extra year of education beyond the average boosts their eventual wages by 10 to 20%. And our third gal of the evening.
I am a 10-year-old girl. I will only complete 1 year of primary education before being removed from school because there was only enough money for my brother's school's fees. I will become pregnant at 15. I will have 2 children and occasionally will have to sell my body to feed them. I will contact HIV and then will die from AIDS at 24, leaving my children destitute.
This is a graph that's looking at the sub-Saharan African region, and this is the percent of students that complete school, specifically to girls. And you see Ghana is at the top, but they're at about 42-43%. And you see what's going on here? Right now, the largest adolescent population in the world is in sub-Saharan Africa. So there's more adolescents ages 10 to 24 in Africa than anywhere else in the world. And this is how many of them are getting a chance to go and get an education. This one's also shocking. Premarital sex among 15 to 17-year-old students, and then non-students. Students are the ones who are in green, and blue are the students, or are the kids who are not going to school. So, can you see the connection? If you go to school, you're not just not having sex, but you're not being coerced into having sex as a girl. And here we're looking at all sorts of different countries. Pregnancy and early marriage are more likely to be consequences rather than causes of girls leaving school early. This is something we have to kind of think about for a second. So, you might think that because a girl drops out of school, or you would think that a girl would not go to school because she's pregnant, but because she's so young, she doesn't get a chance to continue school. And when she doesn't continue school, she's going to go down the road that's been projected for her, and the road is to become a very young parent. So once girls leave school, pregnancy and marriage are likely to follow in short order, especially in developing countries. This one is probably the one that hurt, that really tears up my my heart more than any of the other ones. Maybe some of you realize this. I didn't until I learned about all this, that most of the people in the world with HIV are women. And you have to kind of think about maybe why that is. And a lot of it's because they don't have a choice to not be partners to people. Young people ages 15 to 24 living with HIV by gender. You can see the females are in the light blue. So these are some statistics. I have plenty more. But let's go back to this other slide. This proverb gets at the reason why girls have a lot working against them. It shows that local wisdom holds that there is no use investing in your daughter because she'll just take that investment with her when she marries. Families in poverty love their daughters, just as any family does. But in impoverished conditions, she is seen as a burden and as a liability. And that influences how our life unfolds. This is the dream. This is the dream view of a young girl. She has a home. She gets to go to primary school. She gets to then go to secondary school. She then gets a chance to have economic empowerment and to choose when she wants to have a family. But this is usually how it works. The walk to school is unsafe. Home chores leave no time for study because girls are the ones who have to do most of the work because they're giving all their attention to her brother. He's the one who gets the food and the school fees, and she just has to play the role of Cinderella. And then this continues on and on and on, and you'll see in this diagram it shows that there's predation that happens on young girls. They get sold as a dowry to gentlemen at a very young age. They then have this, frankly, this burden of having a family at a very young age, and there's no future there. And then, as a mother, she's forced into and even thinks it maybe is the right thing to do the exact same thing that that her parents did. That's the girl effect. girls all over the world are facing half of the sexual assaults worldwide. These sexual assaults again happen usually when they're younger than 15 years of age. Still shocking to me. 75% of HIV teens are girls in sub-Saharan Africa. By 2016, almost 165 million girls will be married before the age of 18. It's hard for me to fathom that that there isn't a choice, but that's the way it is for a lot of girls in the world. 96 million girls in developing countries are illiterate. Pregnancy is the leading cause of death in girls 15 to 19, which we talked about earlier. And 70% of the children who are out of school are girls. So we'll stop just for a second, then we're going to go into some real life examples. But any questions or comments kind of so far? One in the back, yeah.
My impression is one of the things that's really powerful about this is that some of it, at least, has been started by girls. It's a grassroots movement.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
A lot of it has actually been started by women who are heroes, being able to have succeeded against all of these odds and trying to convince basically the people in this room how big of a deal this is and that it actually is the key to the future of the world.
Just out of curiosity, do you know where those initial women were from and what their religious background was?
We're going to get into religion. But there is there are a few women, and I actually chose not. There's actually a whole film. It's a little segment that talks about the global leaders, and it's women and men that are being global leaders in this. One that I'll tell you right now is a group called the Elders. It's actually led by Nelson Mandela, and it's a collection of all of the wise people who we have really uplifted as heroes in the world in the 20th. In the 21st century, in the 20th century, and among them are a number of women. So, yeah.
A few years ago at Senate Assembly, we had a program called Stand Up for Africa, and in many cases, the men have HIV. They refuse to wear protection, so the women are the innocent victims in these cases.
Right. Yeah. Religion plays a big role in that too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, having worked with teen mothers in the United States, that statistic you said about schooling going with, getting pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, the largest reason, or the timing, it's after girls drop out of school that they get pregnant. They don't leave school usually because they become pregnant.
Right.
It's after they drop out.
Right. So most of our television shows portray it that way, though, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. She's pregnant and she has to drop out of school. Yep.
Yeah. I think it's something like 80%. I can't remember the statistics. But
yeah.
School, dropping out of school comes first.
Right. All right. So there is this question, because it tears at you, doesn't it? And we're going to look at a real life example of a young girl who is stuck in literally stuck.
Nasa kaya yun na kaya kaya mabuhok. Nasa kaya yun ang siyuli. Nasa kuwala, ilang ako. Nawalan kiti yo. Okay.
So we're talking a lot about girls, and you know, part of me feels like I shouldn't even be up here because I'm not a girl. But I realize that it's also about boys too, and you know, the statistics show that when you reinvest in a girl, she will actually reinvest in her brothers and in her father. And in her future sons, and her entire community. And she will give 90% of what she earns towards that. But if you do that with boys, with me, I'm only going to invest 40% in people outside of myself. So girls are powerful change agent in poverty reduction. But boys are they really get in the way, and there's a lot of other things that get in the way. And what I want to do now, and I apologize because I'm with this pop out of this presentation again, go back into the other one, is talk about how religion plays a role in all of this. So I'd like you to just take a second and think about what your image of God was like when you were a kid. We don't like to think about this, but religions have helped shape and continue to perpetuate constructs that subjugate girls and women, that suppress them, that eliminate them from having opportunity. And you know, probably most of us here, especially being in Holy Village, would like to think that religion is really about, and only about, you know, mercy and hope and justice and peace and love. But it's also used as a tool to violate the rights of girls and women by claiming them as subjects and property, as we just experienced in this last video. Subjects and property of their fathers and husbands. And not just that, but also inferior members of society. And we just don't say that out loud much. But it's definitely still prevalent. And the entity that makes religion especially dangerous to the girl effect is that religions have this unique ability to deem something sacred. You know, someone can say something to you, and you can be like, meh. But if the religious leader says it, it's sacred. It becomes sacrosanct, becomes something that is maybe even desired by God, you know? And when certain things are said, and I believe some of those things are abominable, human-created ideologies, constructs, opinions, and then they consecrate those things and they make them holy. And then in doing so, believers, young and old, but especially the young, take that human construct, ideology, or opinion, and they don't just believe it, but they believe that that's what God believes. So I'm going to be a little dangerous, and I'm intentionally really pushing. So I'm a, you know, I want you to recognize that as we begin this process. So I see a lot of life in also what we're talking about here, but I'm going to push against some of the constructs that are found in the Judeo-Christian tradition, which I know you guys will be familiar with. So when you were a kid, let's say you're about the age of the girls and the girl effect, you know, around 11 or 12, what was your image of God? Yeah, one? Yeah.
Father.
Okay.
Your father?
No, just a father.
Just a fatherly
maleness.
Right. Me too. And you know, if you're a descendant of an Abrahamic tradition or a descendant of Western culture, your image may be similar to ours, and especially to Michelangelo's in the early 16th, when he was doing the Sistine Chapel in the early 16th century. And that looks like this, right? There's God. A giant Santa Claus-looking figure with Jesus sandals hanging out in the clouds with his cherubim. I love this painting. I went and I stared at it for an hour once, but I think it's dangerous because this image of God, and we believe God is our creator, our sustainer, the ruler of all things, is a dude. An image that is perpetuated by how we speak of one component of the Trinity, and we tend to say God the Father. Father, Father. That parental relationship is really important, but it tends to be male. And I want to highlight that, you know, even just today, in our Bible study, we were talking about how there's these beautiful female images of God and even names of God. So I'm just going to bring up one, which is El Shaddai. And I was learning this morning that that El is the name of God, and Shad is the name for the heavy breasts of a nursing mother. So that El Shaddai is the you know, a mother nursing. It's pretty cool. That's another name for God, one that was used a lot.
Used by whom?
Used by the Judeo by
biblical.
Jews, basically.
Biblical.
Yeah, it's in the Bible.
It's in the Old Testament.
Yeah. Yeah. Fred is the guy to talk to about that, not me. But he can tell you more about that. Okay, so this is slide number one. But, you know, knowing that this imagery is still alive and prevalent today, you know, how does this play into the girl effect? That God is male.
I was also thinking too with this image, Eve, the only woman represented is under God's arm, right? That's Eve.
This is Eve here.
Adam and Eve is off to the right, under God's arm, under God's left arm.
Oh, here's Eve.
And while it's a beautiful image, it's also problematic because it portrays an idea that God is forming the connection with them and is giving Eve away. So in this image, he's holding her as the power, and he's almost presenting her to Adam.
Wow. That?
So.
You just blew my mind.
Beautiful, but problematic.
I feel, I didn't even know that was Eve. That's just,
yeah.
Wow. Okay. Thank you for that.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, chime in here on the next one then, because here we go. All right. We'll get, so continuing in this flavor of Michelangelo's work. In this story, as we read it, Eve is claimed to be made, and even in the Bible, it doesn't say man specifically. It says ground being, a human being, a being that is coming from the earth. Really, earthling might be one way to describe it. But it also can be described as a man, and that definitely is the route that we have taken in our tradition. And that, what does it mean? What does it mean that males come first? That God is male, that males come first. That females were made from males. That females are inferior to males in the eyes of God. And then we also have this interpretation of the Garden of Eden story that it's the woman, right, that takes the fruit. She's the instigator of sin and suffering in the world. She's the one. It's Eve who was the one who ate that fruit from the forbidden tree. And in response, this, I'm quoting from the NRSV of the Bible, the response is God saying to Eve, "I will greatly increase your pain in childbearing. Yet your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you." I don't like those words. So I don't want to be a bully on the Christian tradition specifically, or the Judeo-Christian tradition. Yeah, Pastor.
I'd like to point out that, of course, that statement is a statement of the world gone wrong, explicitly, right? And so that statement of hierarchy that
Beautiful.
Suggests is precisely the fallout of things going wrong, not how they're supposed to be, which is, I think, an important framing of it.
Right. I totally agree.
Also in this image, the snake is portrayed as a woman. So the fact that the one who deceives and is the deceptor is a woman, as shown in imagery, is also sending us a message.
Right.
Is this also Michelangelo?
Yeah. Let me just give a couple other examples, because that I'm not trying to pick on a tradition, and in fact, in interpretation and hermeneutics, there's a lot of that can be encountered, as the pastor's bringing up. So here's just a few other things that are still prevalent in our religious traditions in the world. In Judaism, men often pray to God in thanks that they're not women. You can ask Jews about that. And then women pray to God in thanks that they are who they are. In Islam, the Quran says that the testimony of two women is needed to counter the testimony of a single man, and that every woman is deserving of half of her brother's inheritance. In Christianity, there's a book in the Bible called Colossians, and that book is typically not attributed to Paul, who is the writer of many letters. But it is in that letter that we read this, and I think many of you guys know this, where it's we read, "Wives, be subject or submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord." So submit to your husband. And then this is also interesting because it plays into the girl effect. "Children, too, you must obey your parents in everything. You can't go to school." Okay, I won't go to school then. And you're supposed to obey your parents, for this is the acceptable duty. That's Colossians 3, chapter 3, verses 18 through 24. In Buddhism, oh man, this really bummed me out when I was studying Buddhism. In many Buddhist traditions, women must actually be reborn as men before they then can reach nirvana and enlightenment. So there's this whole needing to then enter into the maleness, to then enter into this divine enlightenment. In Hinduism, the practice of arranged marriages is still prevalent. And then there's this thing called Devadasi. My wife Michelle can speak to it more. But that's when girls are married to specific deities and become kind of temple brides. And really what they become is temple prostitutes. And in India, this is outlawed. It's been outlawed since the 1980s. But it still exists in certain areas. And in fact, there's a many of our Lutheran schools are connected to a center in southern India, in Bangalore, where they're trying to they actually have to take girls out of their neighborhoods so that, because it's tradition that those girls would be temple prostitutes. They have to remove them and actually have them come to a safe place where they won't be put into that situation and they're educated. And actually quite a few Lutheran colleges go and spend time learning about this this whole event. It's called Vistar. It's the place in southern India. We could name other examples, but the point is to show that most religions, once found it or continue to find it acceptable that girls and women are inferior or subject to their fathers and to their husbands. That's the point I'm trying to make. So one person is doing a lot of good work in retirement is Jimmy Carter. And he's part of this group called the Elders that I was speaking to earlier. And Jimmy Carter, as you know, he was a Baptist. I think he still probably claims himself as a Baptist, but he actually spoke out against some of the views in his church recently, and it caused quite a ruckus. I don't know if you heard about it in the news. But this is what he said, and he said this at the Parliament of the World Religions a couple years ago. At their most repugnant, the belief that women are inferior human beings in the eyes of God gives excuses to the brutal husband who beats his wife, the soldier who rapes a woman, the employer who has a lower pay scale for women employees, or parents who decide to abort a female embryo. In response to the girl effect today, I believe that what we really need in the religious sphere is change. Change that helps girls to view themselves as equals to boys and their bodies. That they are the ones who own their bodies, and that their lives are their own. They're not their parent. It's not their father who has the ownership of their life. And I think to get there, religious leaders have to recognize that and uplift the feminine and the divine, such as Fred was doing with us this morning. And to dismantle this idea that there's an old man in the clouds and his name is God. We have to gain an appreciation for critical readings or alternative readings, as Pastor Scott shared with us earlier. There's so much actually life to be found in the creation narratives. And it's still sacred. It's still sacred words, especially. But we have to experience this, especially in the texts that we struggle with. And we have to be asking, who's speaking to us in those texts? And how are they speaking to us? One thing I love is that God has a mother. Jesus has a mom. The mother of God. The Buddha has a mother. We forget that. We need to highlight our female heroes. Those women heroes in religious history as well as today. And to do that, we need to elect women into positions of religious leadership. While women rise to positions of leadership in business and public office around the globe, there is a ton of stagnation in the promotion of women to formal positions of authority in much of their religious sphere. This is all too common a picture, I think. In Christianity, for example, ordination as clergy or deacons is impossible for Catholics and Eastern Orthodox, and as we know, many conservative Protestant denominations. And finally, we must remember that the initial cause and the ultimate purpose of most religions and spiritualities was and is to bring meaning, connection, values, and response to life, to promote peace and love, social justice, to work towards the cessation of suffering for all sentient beings, to do unto others as we would have them do unto us, and to hope for realizing a better world. So that's a little bit on religion. We can now take a moment for comments while I get into the other presentation again.
It's just that some of our images of God, though, have both masculine and feminine qualities.
And right.
So I think if we take that more holistic view of God and the feminine qualities that we want to celebrate, like hope and grace and love and things like that, and the nurturing part of God, even as we call our earth Mother Earth, that part that nurtures our existence and the creation that sustains us, is all part of a feminine side of God that should also be celebrated along with the masculine quality. So,
amen. I'm completely with you. You need to go preach that in your church and in every office that you hold. I'm with you. So now we get to see someone who is being given opportunity. What the girl effect can do. What to do. The girl effect is a movement, right? It's a movement. It's the idea is to bring awareness to the movement. So all of this is stuff that you can get by just going to thegirleffect.org. And you can go home to your congregation and say, I want to tell you about this movement, the girl effect. And as you know, the videos are stunning and really they speak for themselves. But if you want to learn more and really get into this, I'm trying to myself. Typically these kinds of things are saying, spread the word in any way that you can. And one of the ways to do that is through social media. But these are organizations, websites of organizations that are actively involved in this. Some of you may be shocked, but the Girl Effect, I was shocked when I found this out at least. That the Girl Effect is, that this website is primarily funded through the Nike Foundation. So the Nike Foundation are the ones who are giving money to pay people to be able to create all this great stuff for us to learn about. And I'm really glad they're doing that because they've got a lot of making up to do. As you all know. The Coalition for Adolescent Girls is a really great website. There's so much information. I thought about making this data heavy, and I thought it wouldn't be a good idea. Something's beeping. Can we?
Oh, it's my stupid thing.
Oh,
sorry.
That's okay.
It keeps setting and it keeps coming out.
You're making sure that we don't miss Vespers. I'd be in trouble if I missed it. CARE has done a lot of the work in some of these videos. So if you want an exhaustive list, I also have that. Lots of resources. But let's talk a little bit about what actually needs to be done. And so you can at least talk about it with people and have some knowledge to share. So one of the things is that girls oftentimes don't get identification. They don't have a birth certificate or an ID. And a girl in a developing world can't prove her age. She may not even know her age to protect herself from child marriage. You know, hey, I'm actually 12 years old. I shouldn't be married. They can't open up a bank account. They can't vote. And they can really struggle to find employment. So it makes it really hard for them to be present in society without identification. There's this high level of illiteracy as we were looking at. So we need to help girls build a resume. They can't do that when 70% of them are out of school. 70% of out of school children are girls. Excuse me. They deserve quality education, safe environments. They deserve to receive support that allows them to get to school on time and stay there throughout their adolescence. They shouldn't have to get pregnant as a teenager. Child marriages are the norm in many cultures where women's bodies are considered their own property. Where their bodies are not considered their own property. Pregnancy is the leading cause of death for girls 15, 18 years old. We talked about that. Girls have the right to be able to protect their health and their bodies. Girls should be able to live without infection from HIV. When girls are educated about HIV, they stand a better chance of protecting themselves, but education is not enough. Girls need to be empowered and supported as they make their own choices. Girls need to have the opportunity to have safe and decent places of work. They need to be able to understand their rights. They need to become financially literate and considered for non-traditional jobs at an appropriate age. If they get their fair share of training and internships, they will be armed and ready for economic independence. They need to be able to receive funding. It's crazy. I think it's something like somewhere between 96% or I think it's like 98.6% or something. It's in one of these films, and maybe we'll watch it, but funding does not go towards girls. So almost no funding, global funding, goes towards girls. And in fact, I was watching the Nike Foundation gave like $20 million to do this. That's peanuts, you know? We need $20 billion. So funding needs to be given specifically towards the empowerment of girls in developing countries. Less than 2 cents of every international aid dollar is spent in the developing world, earmarked for girls. And when a girl has resources, she will reinvest them. So we should really invest in girls because they're a good investment. They'll give to their community at a much higher rate than boys. If the goal is health, wealth, and stability for all, the girl is the best investment. 7th thing to think about, adolescent girls aren't just future women, they're girls. They deserve their own category. They need to be a distinct group. We can't just put women and girls together. Does that make sense? When we lump them together, we're completely forgetting about this critical age. So we need to focus specifically on adolescent girls and their aid, education, their sports, their civic participation, their health, their economics. They will be future mothers, but they live in the present moment. The eighth thing is that laws need to be enforced. Girls need advocates to write, to speak up, lobby, to talk about the girl effect in churches, and to work to enforce good laws that will change discriminatory policies. We have a long road ahead to do that throughout the world. And this is an important one. Girls should be a statistic. They shouldn't be not a statistic. We need to have girls be a statistic because we don't know how to help girls until we know what's going on with them. All the governments and NGOs and social scientists, they need to be the ones who are doing statistical analysis on girls. So if you're one of those people, please start focusing on girls. We need an annual girl report card for every country so we can keep track of which girls are thriving and which ones aren't. And the tenth thing is that all of us, the boys, the girls, the moms, the dads, grandmas and grandpas, if we don't all rally to support girls, nothing is going to change. Not for them, not for us. Change starts with right now, here and now. So we got to get going. So I'm going to do a little recap here, and then we'll be done. So why does this matter? Why the girl effect? And I'm going to shout them all out to you. This is why. Because the HIV epidemic would be confronted in a real way. Because girls are the key future to economic development, especially in our developing countries in the world. Because we are dealing with overpopulation, and it is in the developing countries where we find the largest amount of adolescent youth today, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, the Arab states, and Latin America. And if we focus on girls, we will dramatically decrease our quickly increasing population trends. Because girls with more schooling participate in greater numbers in the labor force and earn more money for their families and society than boys do when they get a chance to do it. Because it will dramatically change infant mortality rates. This is nuts. For every year a girl gets schooling, for every 1 year, infant mortality rates decline 5 or 10%. So if you give a girl 2 more years of school, that's 20% less of a chance of infant mortality. Because investing in girls at a young age will radically change child marriage constructs, sex trafficking, because they'll be in school, and domestic abuse. And finally, because it will give young women an opportunity to make their own decisions. We don't think about that, but there are so many girls in the world, women who have not had the opportunity to make their own decisions about their life, about medical care, about their bodies, about the best things for their children. They have never been able to do that without explicit approval from their father or from their husband. So the girl effect can change the world. That's the end of the presentation, and I encourage you all to check out the girl effect, and I believe that you can do the exact same thing that I did. Get up, and actually a lot of this stuff is even prepackaged for you to make a presentation. So, yeah.
I'm sure you all have a lot of connections that you could, you know, work with girls. But if you don't, I work with girls in Rwanda all the time, and it's
wow.
2% of, on your graph,
yeah,
that go to school in Rwanda. So if you'd like to directly be connected with a girl in Rwanda, I would be happy to do that.
Wow.
We have a Lutheran high school there in Rwanda. It's a fairly new school, but then we also have a lot of girls that just want to go to village school. So see me, I work in the craft cave, I'm off tomorrow, but...
can you tell us your name?
My name is Cindy Tuwisku, and I can hook you up with a girl in Rwanda, if you'd like to help me send her to school.
Wow. Thank you. Just so you know, you're beeping again. Any other comments? We've got, if you want to leave, you're welcome to. We have Vespers in 10 minutes, but if people want to stay and continue to chat, you can do that as well. Yeah.